Secure Trust is a division of TrustWave. Secure Trust delivers world-class security, privacy, risk, and compliance assessment services for the enterprise market, as well as merchant risk management programs and solutions for merchant program sponsors around the globe. Secure Trust is committed to addressing security, risk, and data privacy customer challenges while building upon our foundation as a payment card industry pioneer, qualified security assessor company, approved scanning vendor, and trusted digital certificate authority. For more information, please visit www.securetrust.com. Welcome to Privacy Elements by Secure Trust. My name is Jason Leichert, and I'm a managing consultant here at Secure Trust. With me today is Chris Brown.
Hello, my name is Chris Brown. I'm product manager for Secure Trust, and my charge is to assess and understand client demands relative to Secure Trust mission and develop products to meet those demands.
And also with us on this podcast is Michael Webster.
Hello. I am Michael Webster, for sure. I am a managing consultant here at Secure Trust, focused on governance, risk, compliance, and privacy, and information security. I am a certified information privacy practitioner, and I'm glad to be here with you.
All right. Thanks for the introductions. Let's move on and talk about the subject, data privacy. All right. Hello. This is Jason Leichert from Secure Trust here with Michael Webster. Say hello, Michael.
Morning. Morning.
And also with us today is Chris Brown, a product manager at Secure Trust.
Hello. Hello.
All right. Good morning. And today we're going to talk about what I think is one of the most critical aspects of data privacy in this episode, which we've colloquially called Honey, Who Shrunk the Data? Right. So we're going to talk about data mapping today. You know, I really want to talk about this as in depth as possible in our limited amount of time, about the importance of knowing where your data is and how to do that. And I think we look at it from an overall privacy perspective. This is a critical aspect for any organization. Michael, is there anything that you can add to that? Like, why should organizations be looking at this as a fundamental aspect of their privacy program?
Well, keep in mind that, privacy in and of itself, which we are normally thinking about personal identifiable information, right? So whether you are, in the U.S., in the state of California, New York, New Mexico, doesn't matter, or you're in Europe with GDPR, what we're really after is what personal identifiable information do you have? And so, if you don't map your data, you really don't know exactly what you have, right? And you're going to come up short when it's time to figure out what you ought to be doing, which jurisdictions, which laws, which regulations are you subject to. So it's a critical first step. And there's some other benefits to doing that, which we can get into later. But essentially, the main reason is if you don't know what you have in terms of personal identifiable information, or PII, as we call it, then you're sort of hamstrung at that point, and everything you do going forward is going to come up short. So that's the main reason.
No, and that makes a lot of sense, right? Because there's going to be, depending on the organization and whatever their data the ecosystem has, there could be just, dozens, if not 100 separate elements that could somehow be PII or linked PII, right? And as we kind of look at this as a tree that branches out, and think of something simple, right? Like a contact form on a website, right? That somebody's opting in to provide information for, maybe marketing materials or whatever it might be. And as this goes through the systems in an organization, it may not only have the data elements that the person is entering, like let's say it's first name, last name, email address, maybe like a birth date, whatever it might be, but that data itself might be used to generate other data, right? And then that data could be linked to other data. Maybe they capture IP address and do geolocation or whatever it might be. As that spreads through an organization, however the organization's using it or they're selling it or whatever that might be, that could be expansive, right? And the level of effort required could be huge. Now, I don't know about you, Michael, but Chris, from your perspective, looking at, you know, a lot of our clients that we have and how they handle data privacy, really, where do you think they should start at? Should we really start at like the core essential pieces of PII as defined by a regulation, or should they just start looking at their data as a whole? What's your perspective?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for that. I think it's very similar to what Michael outlined, is that we have a couple objectives that we're trying to reach, and data mapping, or in other terms, data inventory and classifying those different types of data, that's how we're able to perform those later actions of things like risk assessment, things like process development, things like control selection. So I think it is important to, I first, of course, identify PII, but then really carry out a comprehensive data inventory and classification to follow each of those data paths through your organization. So really kind of beginning with the end in mind, saying that if later I'm going to have to assess my risks, if I know later I'm going to have to implement systems, processes, controls, well, how do I pick those controls? It depends on what data you have. It depends on how you use it and whether you've implemented processes to uphold those data subject rights. So I would say that inventory and classification is imperative for all data types.
No, and it should be in a lot of organizations, right? Not only those who deal with PII data, but maybe more specifically HIPAA data or PCI data, right? We look at it sort of the same way, where you should be classifying all of your data and looking at it holistically. And then it gives you control from the start, right? Versus, hey, for this particular legislation, I'm going to do this. And for this other legislation, I'm going to do this. Maybe that piecemeal approach might work in smaller organizations that don't have or they're not a large size. They're not very complex. Everything's very simplistic. Maybe that sort of ad hoc buffet style approach might work. But for an enterprise environment, you really have to get to the bare bones, get to the start of it and look at that data holistically and start classifying everything. And then you can look at how you're going to protect it. Michael, did you have any additional thoughts on that?
Yeah, I wanted to revisit something you said earlier, you know, that deals with, you know, sort of sussing out where this data is, right? And so, you know, in an earlier life when I did some development, you know, if I put on my development hat from a data perspective, right? In most cases, most of the data, whatever it is, right, it's going to be sitting in some store, typically a database. And so, one of the major benefits of doing this exercise is think of what the real reason for, you know, privacy regulations are, right? It's giving rights to consumers. One of those rights is the right to delete, okay? I can make that request as a consumer, as an organization, you must delete my data. Well, if you think about that on a technical level, you know, on a more basic, you know, there's some command at some point that has to be run to delete that data. But if you don't know where it is, then you can't do that. Or if you only know partially where it is, you might make a request or receive a request, execute that request, but you're only going to get rid of part of the data because you don't have the proper links in your databases, in your files, and things of that nature. And so that mapping that we're talking about is so critical, because you could do all the work, miss something, have a request come in, not be able to respond to the request properly. And because you're working with partners, the data doesn't really get deleted, right? So you're not really in compliance with the regulation itself. So not only must you map it, but you must certify internally that map is valid, and that requires really getting into the innards of an organization's data storage capability, data backups, flat files, paper, third party organizations, you know, where you might be storing data in the cloud, disk to disk, whatever it turns out to be. But you gotta really know where all this data is, and making sure that all the right people are at the table to have this conversation so that you don't miss anything, and then review it is probably the best way to get at it.
And that's a great insight, right? You know, I think you hit on a really key aspect of this exercise, which is ultimately, how do we respond to a subject rights request, right? Or data subject request, or whatever you want to call, right? There's 40 different names for it at this point, right? But when somebody wants to exercise their right, like you said, in the right to be forgotten, a critical aspect of that is, how are you verifying that you actually have deleted the appropriate data, right? Like you said, something somewhere is running a procedure or some type of programmatic activity to go in and delete these things. How are you verifying that it's being done with a reasonable certainty, right? Because the last thing you want to have is a data breach, and that data breach uncovers these records that you thought were deleted, but somebody forgot about, you know, replication database Zeta sitting out there in some data, you know, in some data center somewhere, and that data wasn't actually deleted, right? Like that's a you know, a fundamental piece, that it's not just performing the action, but verifying that you've actually done it, right, with a reasonable level of certainty. And that, I mean, that, and that's a, you know, another aspect of this is, it's the data that you don't know that's part of the problem, right? Now we look at it from a PCI perspective all the time, right? And with some of our other data privacy clients, you know, what is the scope of your data? So when it comes to data privacy, you know, like we talked about with Chris and we, you know, a few minutes ago, where's that data? We classified it. We have these controls over it based on what its classification is. You know, now, Michael, to your point, we're going through the effort of, you know, responding to a request, like a request to delete my information. How do we know what's been done? But how do we verify where our data exists in the first place to make sure that we delete it everywhere, right? Or if it's like a GDPR right to rectify, how do we know that we change those records everywhere? It's those unknown channels that, to me as a security professional, scare me the most, right? It's not my communications channels that I know about. Those I can protect. Those are the things that I know that I'm doing something about. It's these channels that I'm not aware of, or this data that I'm not aware of. We run across it with some of our PCI clients all the time. Michael, I don't know about you and Chris, but many times I've been at a client and I'm doing an assessment for PCI, and we will specifically look at like a customer care center, call center, and I'll find that somebody's keeping a record of these credit card numbers for some other purpose. It's still business related, but it's an unknown channel, right? And that causes me a lot of grief. I don't know about you, Michael, but that scares me.
Yeah, it is a little bit scary. And when you stop to think about how cybersecurity, information security versus privacy is practiced within an organization, right? Typically, these organizations and groups are sort of separate, right? Security folks, they're doing their thing. Network engineers, you know, security engineers, they're sort of protecting, you know, the perimeter, so to speak. And then you have, you know, privacy professionals, and they're sort of looking at things differently. But what these regulations are doing is saying, you're going to have to start practicing privacy by design or default, which essentially means that you have to bake these privacy protections into everything you're doing. So if we stop and take a look at just development, because that's the probably the most difficult one to discuss out. If I'm a developer and I'm practicing, you know, privacy by design, I'm thinking about where this data is, where it's going, who I'm sharing it with, so forth and so on, right? And if I do that properly, you know, up front, and that's sort of baked into our organization overall, then we don't have to come back every, you know, 2 months, 3 months, and we're doing this data mapping on an ongoing basis. You know, we initiate it and we forget about it and we come back to it, right? We don't want to be doing that. What we want to be doing is, in everything that we're doing, that we are actually going forward and, you know, paying attention to, you know, what we're doing with these data elements on an ongoing basis, and just practice that as a way of doing business in the organization. And that will get us to practicing privacy by design, or default, as it's known in most places.
No, and that's a lot of great points there. I think there's a lot to unpack in what you just said, because privacy by design really means to me that the organization has to look at this as a fundamental function that's, you know, designing these processes from start to finish to protect this data. But at the same time, it involves everybody in the business potentially, right? There's the scope of, you know, people, processes, and the technology that will come into play for privacy by design can be daunting. And, you know, when we look at it from some of our other clients, I know some of mine, the issue isn't that they don't have these processes, is that they have weak governance internally to enforce them, right? Yes. And it really requires the organization to buy in and start building these processes from the start. Because when you try to take, you know, an organization, I had a client that was a 200-year-old company who'd evolved over the years. And a lot of questions I got from them were all around the same sort of scenario as, and I know you both have heard it, Chris and Michael, but we've always done it this way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
And maybe from that context, it always worked because we, at that point in time, you know, we were able to keep our people, processes, and technology, you know, up to speed close enough, but, you know, to meet that demand. But when you look at this ever-changing landscape, we have to have privacy by design as part of the system, because if not, it's unsustainable. It's not scalable, and it ends up costing the business more, in my opinion, right? Instead of designing these in teaching our people the processes, giving them the tools and technology to do it, to find this data, to classify it, to respond to subject rights requests, to make sure it's securely deleted, or whatever the right may be. It's a huge change for a lot of organizations, because I think there's just weak governance in a lot of places, because they just point at somebody and say, do it, make sure it gets done. But no one's sitting around saying, hey, what's the budget? What's our scope? Right. In putting these building block pieces into their program so that their organizations can meet those requirements. Because if you look at the privacy landscape, pretty much every regulation says something specific about building privacy by design. And how can you meet it if you can't demonstrate that you've done that?
I have a consideration. Sorry to speak over you there, Jason. To that point of building blocks and to that point of privacy by design as the end goal, even for organizations that aren't there yet, it's a really key point that while you're mapping your data, you should consider your later actions. Data mapping isn't an exercise in and of itself. The only point is to consider the end goal of satisfying those subject rights requests, of maintaining compliance for your business, of reducing risk for your business. So as you're making those incremental steps toward privacy by design as the ideal, at the very least, we should be thinking about things like, we don't want it. We don't want to be responsible if we don't need it, because you're responsible for what you have. So I guess what my takeaway is that all those later actions and your compliance and your ability to address those subject rights requests depend on how well you map your data and whether or not you're considering those later actions as you map your data.
No, absolutely right. And, you know, when we map that data, and this might be a little bit of a shift, right? We should not only be mapping like where it's at and where it's coming from, but we need to generate, you know, some type of, you know, inventory list of what are all those different data actions, right? As that data moves through an organization, are we transferring it? Are we receiving it? Are we generating it? Is it just being collected from our third party or from the consumer themselves or the data subject? These are all things that should go into that data mapping inventory sheet, you know, and obviously it's going to be potentially onerous for some organizations that have a broad scope of PII, and it's going to change based on their size, nature, and complexity, right? But starting from that building blocks perspective of, okay, here's what I've got to start with. I'm looking at privacy by design. We can tack those pieces on. Michael, do you have any thoughts around that?
Yeah. I mean, what we're really talking about here, right, is data about data, right? Or metadata, as it's commonly known. And that sort of puts us into the conversation where we're talking about, you know, if you are a small organization, yeah, you can probably get away with this manually or with a few procedures and things of that nature. But large organizations won't be able to do that. And so they're going to be looking at existing tools that they have or implementing tools that will allow them to manage this metadata, right? So that they can understand where the data is on an ongoing basis, to Chris's point, right? You're mapping it and you're going forward. It's not a point in time kind of thing. Laws will change. You will need to do different things. So having the capability to know where this data is, where it's traveling, where it's coming to rest, verifying that it's been deleted, corrected, so forth and so on, which is really the end state of most privacy regulations, is just being able to comply with those consumer rights, right? And then where you have what is commonly called reasonable security practices, which a lot of these regulations have, you can, you know, to your point of governance, you'll be able to show and demonstrate that you're doing the things that need to be done, right? I know where it is. I know what we've done with it. Here's how we verified it. And here are our reasonable security practices specifically around this data, right? There's one thing to say, oh yeah, we have a firewall, we've configured it, we have intrusion detection and all these kinds of things, right? We have people paying attention, you know, to logs and all those kinds of things. But when it comes to privacy, the only thing anybody's going to care about in the end is, what are you doing with this data and where is it, right? So I think that's, you know, primarily the focus for large organizations. They're going to have to understand, you know, how to automate some of these processes.
No, and that's a great point, right? Because if they're large or it's complex, it's not a simple tabletop exercise, right? And, you know, for small organizations that have a limited or smaller data ecosystem where there's privacy data, they can tabletop it, document it, you know, map it, inventory it, you know, diagram it, and then they can have, you know, build the processes around that to, you know, support subject rights requests. But for other organizations, they really need to be looking at what tools they have and make sure that they have the expertise to perform these sort of data mapping functions, because without it, how you're not going to be able to support any type of subject rights request, right? It's just not going to be possible. Or if it's possible, it's not going to be timely, right? Good, faster, cheap, pick two, right? You can't have all three at the same time. So, you know, I guess when it comes down to that, when we look at data mapping, you know, a lot of organizations are going to run across either inconsistencies or non-compliance with their own policies, or potentially, you know, non-adherence to laws and regulations. And maybe we should talk a little bit about what they can do immediately, you know, things to rectify those issues and, you know, when they discover them, right? And because obviously that sort of feedback cycle should be part of this privacy by design methodology. So I think there's some things that they can do, right? And maybe Michael or Chris, you can speak to these maybe better than I can. You know, when they find that data and they identify it and they map it, what should they be doing? Should they be looking at segmentation, isolation, role-based access control, maybe segregation of duty? What are some of the things that a customer, a client, or an organization can expect that they need to do when they run across this information?
I think you hit on some of those things that right on the head. What I consider first are implementing smart segmentation, making sure that only those individuals that have a business need access, least privilege models, and segregation of duty. And the imperative is, again, that you have to have those data types defined and whether or not one person or another should or should not see it. So I would say that kind of leans to that point of beginning with the end in mind, so that as you're working through that, you have some inclination of what are those actions that you're going to need to perform to uphold data subject rights.
Great, because it could be a culmination of a lot of different things. And I think in that case, you know, you touched on a very critical point, and maybe Michael can talk through it. You know, we found this data, but what's the end goal here? Right. What is the end goal to our program? And maybe one of them, and maybe there's multiple goals, right? We have multiple objectives we're trying to meet, right? And one of those is going to be responding to data subject rights requests. But maybe in some cases, organizations that don't particularly deal with PII, but still they're not selling it, they're not buying it, but they still have it, right? They still fall under scope for a regulation. maybe the real end goal is that they just should delete it because they don't need it.
Right. Right. And that would be the, you know, really the sort of holy grail, right, that you get to in that process. So more than delete it because we don't need it, you're thinking on the front end, why are we even collecting it, right? And that goes to what business are we in, right? And what data do we really need, and what value does it have? Because as privacy grows, this is going to get more complex. So I want to be on the front end, taking us back to, you know, privacy by design, asking the question, you know, of the requirements, you know, and data owners, do you really need this data? And if so, what's the justification for it? What's its value? Or is it just something good to have, right? And it depends on what kind of organization you're in, right? You know, if you are a grocery store, you know, there's certain things that you need, you know, if you're doing online sales, and there's certain things you don't need. If you're, you know, a multinational conglomerate and your business is big data, you probably need quite a bit more. So, but the process is the same. Upfront, why do you need this data? What value does it have to the organization? Can we get away without it? Or do we actually need it, or is it just good to have, right? So I think once that process is baked into to organizations, they will mature in the space, and it will make it much easier for them going forward.
And that's a great point, right? Like, why do we have it? Do we need it? What's the value to our business, right? Is it something that we need to protect and we need to spend the time and resources to protect according to, you know, whatever the privacy, you know, either our privacy program or more specifically a privacy regulation? Is it really necessary? And then if it is, then we can look at those controls like Chris talked about. Are we going to segregate more effectively? Are we going to have stronger segregation of duties? Are we going to have stronger segmentation? Are we going to look at our least privileged models? Are we going to move to different, you know, programmatic methods to accessing it so we can do more effective logging? I think there's a lot of pieces inside of that, but that's a fundamental aspect of my data mapping is as I map it and discover it, or I'm just mapping what's already there. Okay, well, let's go back to those business owners and say, do we actually need this? Is it really do we need it for some type of processing? Is it just something that we make money from by selling it? I think there's a lot of pieces there that, you know, should be addressed as part of the data mapping, because you might decide at that time as part of your privacy by design principles is, hey, once we found it and we talked to the business owner, we don't need it. Now we can rebuild our processes to get rid of it as soon as humanly possible and comply with the regulation. I think that's a great point. But as we've mapped that data, I mean, if from my perspective, once we've mapped it, and I think this is a deeper topic for another episode, but really we need to look at that risk, right? And go back to some of the basics of these data security legislations, these data privacy legislations that are out. Absolutely, they're focused on how a business is protecting that consumer data and responding to subject rights requests. But I think a fundamental piece of that we lose track of as business owners, as working with this, is it really comes down to the risk to the consumer, right? And if we haven't identified what that data is, how can we identify the risks to the consumer as well as the risks to us? Because obviously, from a business perspective, I think most businesses are concerned the most about their risk and about, you know, incurring fines or whatever other penalties may be levied against them if they're non-complying with the law. But Let's take a step beyond that. Look at this from a privacy maturity perspective and focus on the risk to the consumer, because that's what I really want my clients to look at is what's the risk to the consumer, right? Our risk to the business is secondary. This is about protecting the consumer and making sure the consumer is aware of their rights and how to exercise them. Okay, well, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Michael.
No, I was just going to say that's a good point. And I think that feedback loop, you know, between organizations and its customers will be really important, because what privacy does that most other processes won't do is seek that feedback, right? So privacy, in essence, because of the, you know, the rights that consumers have, right? There will be this ongoing dialogue, you know, do this with my data, don't do this, correct this, right? And so organizations will be able to take that and make the adjustments that they need to make as they start collecting the analytics about, okay, you know, what are people really doing? Why is everyone saying to us, delete this particular data set, right? Or, and no one asked about this data set. And so they'll be able to use that to make, you know, make some decisions about what data they're collecting. And that'll be part of that feedback loop that they'll need. But yeah, that's a good point.
And that feedback's important, right? For the business, as part of their privacy by design principles, is to really look at what's the risk to the consumer, what's the risk to us. Let's map where this data is, determine if we need it, protect it, you know, follow a framework that's scalable, right? So that way we can make sure that our program can meet the demands of, you know, upcoming legislation or newly released legislation or changes to our privacy program. But then have that feedback cycle, right? Where we're having the business continually look at their practices and to make sure that, you know, they're meeting their objectives, they're protecting their business and they're protecting their customers. Chris, is there anything you wanted to add to that from your perspective?
Nothing really to add. I suppose that, you know, my recapping points are just that this data inventory classification is absolutely imperative for those later actions of risk assessment, process development, and control selection in order to satisfy subject rights and reduce risk to the business. And I guess the second point to that is that we know and we discuss that while you're mapping your data, you have to consider those later actions. What do I do with this data? Do we need it? And perhaps the more nuances, once there's data that you've decided that you do need and is part of a business process, with whom do I share that data? And do I have to share everything? So perhaps there's just some fine tuning that needs to be done. But really understanding the imperative nature of data mapping and that you should consider your later actions as you're going through that exercise.
No, and that really kind of summarizes it, right? I think at the end of the day, you know, data mapping goes back to being this critical function, right? And it feeds into all these different portions of the business. And not only do we need to look at it from a business perspective, but we need to look at it from a customer perspective and what best protects the consumer, what the data subject. And it has large ramifications for how the business should operate when we really look at privacy by design principles. And I think coming up here in the next episode or two, we're gonna really get down into the risk assessment portion of it and help determine what those risks are and how we can go about that with in our organizations or with our clients. I want to thank you both, Chris and Michael. Thank you both for being here.
Of course,
appreciate it.
And we will talk again next time.
All right.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
SecureTrust will not offer any legal guidance or counseling. The views and opinions expressed during this podcast are those of the authors and presenters and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of TrustWave or SecureTrust.